Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Papal Audience. Pope Benedict looks back at his four-day visit to Portugal last week and spoke of Our Lady of Fatima's appeal for prayer, penance and conversion. No justice without life. The justice ministers of several countries explain why their governments are opposed to the death penalty during an international conference on this issue sponsored by the Catholic lay group Sant'Egidio. Crime and Punishment. A leading anti-death penalty activist in the US and a Catholic convert talks about how his views changed after he became director of a state prison in Florida and had to supervise executions there. At his weekly general audience, Pope Benedict looked back at his four-day pastoral visit to Portugal last week. He spoke of Our Lady of Fatima's appeal for prayer, penance and conversion, saying this is essentially a summons to hope in God's merciful love. Charles Collins reports.
Pope Benedict on Wednesday greeted thousands of pilgrims in St. Peter's Square for his weekly general audience. He took the time to look back on last week's apostolic voyage to Portugal.
My pastoral visit to Portugal this past week enabled me to honor Our Lady of Fatima and to pay homage to the distinguished history of Christian faith and the evangelizing zeal of the Portuguese people. The visit began with a mass celebrated in the Terreiro do Passo in Lisbon, where I urge Portugal's Christians to carry on this great work of evangelization in our own day. The heart of my journey was my pilgrimage to Fatima for the 10th anniversary of the beatification of the shepherd children Francisco and Jacinta. The evening recitation of the Rosary and the solemnness on the anniversary of the first apparition were centered on the message of Fatima.
Pope Benedict said Our Lady's message still has meaning for today.
Our Lady's exhortation to prayer, penance, and conversion is essentially a summons to hope in God's merciful love and trust in His saving plan, which triumphs over the threats and calamities of history. As I give thanks for the blessings of her pilgrimage, I ask you to join me in asking Our Lady of Fatima to continue by her prayers to guide us on our journey to heaven, to open the hearts of all to God's infinite mercy, and to confirm the Church in her perennial mission of proclaiming before the world the saving gospel of Jesus Christ.
Pope Benedict's next overseas voyage will be to Cyprus. The Holy Father leaves for his three-day journey on June the 4th. I'm Charles Collins.
No Justice Without Life was the title of an international congress in Rome this week against the death penalty, organised by the Catholic lay community Sant'Egidio, that was attended by justice ministers and senior government officials from over 30 countries. The aim of the gathering was to discuss the latest developments in the ongoing campaign to abolish the death penalty around the world and to draw up new strategies for the forthcoming UN General Assembly vote on the third resolution calling for a universal moratorium on the death penalty. Each year, a handful of states around the world join the anti-capital punishment camp by either abolishing the death penalty or else announcing an official moratorium on executions. Among the justice ministers who attended the Congress was Andres Carl Nell from South Africa. He spoke to us about how and why his nation abolished the death penalty following the end of apartheid rule.
That constitution affirmed the values of human dignity, it affirmed the values of life. and it protected citizens against cruel and unusual punishment. So therefore, in 1995, our constitutional court, the highest court of our land, heard a case involving the death penalty and declared the death penalty to be unconstitutional. And therefore, on the basis of that judgment, in 1997, the death penalty was formally abolished in South Africa. And it was a moment that made us very proud as a nation, that we were able to affirm those values that are so central to our democracy.
But given the very high levels of violent crime in South Africa, does his government face pressure to consider restoring capital punishment? Minister Nel again.
We emerge, as many societies on our continent and in fact in the world, from a very deeply divided, a very painful, a very violent past in which human rights, human dignity were trampled upon. And despite the fact that we've been a democracy for 16 years now, the legacy of our history still lives with us. Poverty, inequality, broken communities, those are all things that we are seeking to repair. And it's in that context, of course, then that violence can be very prevalent in society. Unfortunately, also, violence against foreign nationals. We've had outbreaks of violence directed at foreign nationals. It's something that has concerned the South African government and many parties and organizations in our society very, very much. We've taken quick and decisive action. We've gone to the people, we've engaged the masses of our people and explained the issues to them. We've also taken very, very strong interventions from the side of law enforcement. However, we're very clear that the answer to those questions is not the death penalty. The answer to those questions is to engage people, to explore the issues, to make them understand, and as a society, collectively, to address those problems.
Minister Nel goes on to explain why he believes there is a link between peace and the campaign against the death penalty when set against the context of his nation's history against the oppression of apartheid.
Most definitely. As I said, for us the struggle against apartheid was not just a negative struggle. It was not simply to replace apartheid with its mirror image. It was indeed to transcend apartheid and to affirm values that are much higher than that. To replace apartheid with something that is genuinely good and of value to humanity. And I think in that context, the campaign against the death penalty was something that formed a very integral part of the struggle against apartheid. Because the death penalty was indeed a very integral instrument of both social and political oppression. And therefore, the struggle against the death penalty, the struggle to affirm the values of human dignity in our constitution, were in a very, very important part of bringing peace, social justice and harmony to South Africa.
Mongolia is the most recent country to announce an official moratorium on executions and the automatic reduction of all death sentences to 30 years in prison. In announcing the moratorium last January, the country's president openly declared his intention of moving towards a full and unconditional abolition of capital punishment. Mrs. Sorsama Shula Bata is a human rights advisor to the Mongolian president, and she admitted that there is still considerable support for the death penalty among the Mongolian population.
Mongolia has a support, lot of support from the international community, like Saint Egidio, but at the national level, there is a different opinions. and some people are against the abolishment of death penalty, keep saying it might increase the serious crime in Mongolia. So we need to organize campaign, let people to understand how important to respect the human dignity as a Mongolian few population need to respect fundamental human rights, so we can create a society without death penalty. And also we need to get support from human rights NGOs and human rights activists, and we also need to organize network among the religious organizations and the community support as well as and mass media support. So there is a lot of things we have to do.
Cambodia abolished capital punishment back in 1989, and the country's justice minister, Ang Vongha Vahana, says his government tries to promote support for abolition in Asia, an area of the world where most countries strongly support the death penalty.
We are the one of the few countries, maybe one of the third or the fourth country in the Asia continent, who get this kind of the, you know, abolition of the death penalty. We try to do our best to promote this idea. I try to promote this idea all the time. And maybe one by one, step by step, we can do that.
You heard the voices of Cambodia's Justice Minister, Ang Vong Vatana, Mrs. Sosama Chulabata, a human rights advisor to the Mongolian president, and the South African Justice Minister, Andries Carl Nel. Today, the United States is the only Western democratic nation that imposes the death penalty on its citizens. But while around 2 out of 3 Americans currently support capital punishment in cases where a person is convicted of murder, there has been a sharp fall in the number of death sentences handed down and in the number of executions eventually carried out. Figures show that the execution rate in the US is around 50% lower compared to the late 1990s. One reason is that state governors, who have the final say on this matter, are more willing to grant clemency where there is any doubt. Another reason for shifting attitudes is the use of more advanced DNA testing, a procedure which has led to scores of death row prisoners being acquitted. One of the US's leading campaigners against the death penalty is Ron McAndrew, who grew up as a strong supporter of capital punishment. McAndrew's views on the death penalty changed dramatically after he served as director of the state prison in Florida, where his job included supervising executions of those on death row. He began by telling us why the death penalty fails to act as a deterrent and reduce levels of violent crime in his country.
I believe that the death penalty increases murders. We know this from the European example, where you do not have the death penalty and you have much less murders than you do in the United States. The death penalty is not a deterrent to murder. It is not a deterrent to any form of crime. It is simply a barbaric politician's tool.
McAndrew went on to explain why he supported the death penalty when younger. And that's why he ended up taking the job as director or warden of the state prison in Florida in 1996.
I grew up in a conservative, very rural country area of North Carolina. I was raised by conservative grandparents who supported the death penalty like everybody else in our community. It was just a very natural thing to support. If you kill someone, you should be killed. I mean, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. The biblical quote was quoted constantly. I found myself one day being asked to go to Florida State Prison as the new warden in 1996. The secretary of the Florida Department of Corrections, Mr. Harry K. Singletary Jr., called me on the phone and said, "Ron, I would like for you to take over Florida State Prison. I'd like for you to be the warden there. It's an enormous responsibility." He said, "I need someone who's very strong and can handle that place. But I have one question I must ask you. Will you have any problems," he said, "carrying out the death penalty?" And my response was very quick and very sure. I said, "No, sir."
But very quickly after starting his new job at this prison, MacAndrew told us how the first seeds of doubt about the justice of the death penalty were planted in his mind.
I started practicing with the death team on carrying out the death penalty. But a few things started happening that I had not counted on. I never realized that I would be the person to meet the family of the condemned and also the family and friends of the victim, or at least the alleged victim. I found myself reading the investigation that had sent this man to death row. As a past investigator, having investigated hundreds of crimes, including murder, I found the investigation rather weak, and I couldn't understand how a jury could have sent this particular individual to death row. I asked an attorney friend who worked in this field, and he told me, "Ron, don't read that." He said, it'll only mess up your mind, because he said, quite frankly, there's no justice in our courts in terms of the death penalty. He said, it's simply a question of which attorney is the best actor and the best convincing attorney in terms of telling the jury their side of the story.
As MacAndrew went on to explain, it was precisely the close contact he had with the families of both the condemned and of the murder victim that provided him with his first moral awakening.
First execution, my first moral shock. I found the mother and two sisters of the condemned waiting to see me outside of my office one morning. And I had a policy of seeing everyone, so I invited them into my office. And I sat across from these three women, and I could tell that they were horribly distressed because someone that they loved very much was about to be killed, purposefully killed. "We have some questions, and will I be able to see my brother?" the sister told me, and I said, "Of course," and I said, I'll bend the rules as much as I can to allow you to visit as often as possible. But when the mother looked me straight in the eye with tears streaming down her face, and she said, "Warden, I just have one question. Will I be able to hug my baby before y'all kill him?" That hit me like a ton of bricks. She left me with an uneasy feeling. I felt my conscience crawling right up my back. I found myself getting to know the prisoner, the condemned. I saw him at his cell every day. I carried messages from his attorney. I realized suddenly that this was not so mechanical. It was not so administrative. It was getting very personal. I then had the sister of the victim, who was very angry and full of hate, and she was looking for revenge. She asked me, she said, "Warden, I want to go to that execution." I said, "Yes, ma'am, I'll approve that." She said, "I want a front row seat. I want to sit right in front of the electric chair. I want to watch this man burn to death."
He shares with us his memories of what happened on the day of the first execution he was in charge of supervising in the Florida State Prison.
The morning of the execution, I thought it would be very automatic, very easy. I went to the death cell. I sat on the bed next to the inmate, and I told him, I said, "I hate to do this, but the law requires me to." I said, "I have to read you your death warrant." I just said, "It's signed by the governor and by the attorney general." And I started reading, and it's a rather long document. And I started reading this, and about halfway through the death warrant, the prisoner who was handcuffed and sitting next to me, he could tell I was having a hard time getting the words out. And he sort of elbowed me a little bit with his left elbow. He said, "It's okay, Warden. I'm ready." He said, "I've made my peace with God. Here, I'm about to kill him, and he's trying to make it easy for me." It told me very quickly which of us was the strongest, because I didn't have that kind of nerve. But I took this man into the death chamber. I put him to death. I watched the family member of the victim stare with hate all across her face throughout the execution, with her arms crossed very angry look, and the condemned was concentrating so strongly on his final prayer that I don't think he even noticed her. I don't think he noticed any of the witnesses.
One of the most pivotal and most shocking executions he witnessed at the Florida State Prison came when, due to a malfunction, flames shot out from the face and head of the condemned man when the electrical current was applied to him in the electric chair. The prisoner in question at that botched execution was a Cuban refugee called Pedro Medina. McAndrew told us more about that gruesome incident in which he saw Medina literally being burnt alive.
This man had no education. He had serious mental problems. He certainly did not know how to interact socially any place with anyone. He had lived a wild life on the streets and a wild life in prisons. He needed psychological help more than anything else. But I went through the same process, took Pedro Medina into the death chamber. I remember watching the engineer remove the sponge from the saline solution and squeeze it before he put it on Pedro Medina's head just before the execution. And I questioned the amount of water he had squeezed out of the sponge. But the chief electrician said it was fine. Everything's fine, he said. So when I gave the order to the executioner to turn on the electricity, there was an immediate fire. A flame dipped down out of a copper helmet on Pedro Medina's head and came straight up in front of my face. His head was on fire. I was aghast. So was everybody else. The electrician, who was wearing the big heavy gloves and had the capability of removing the helmet, asked me if we should continue. There's no way I could stop. And I told him to continue. I walked out of that death chamber that day knowing that I had personally helped burn a human being to death, burn him to death. I hoped, but somehow in the back of my mind, I still supported the death penalty. And today I can't understand why, but I did. The governor was very angry about the fire. He actually fired me and rehired me in the same day, and then ordered me to go to Texas and to learn how to do lethal injections. So I went to Huntsville, Texas, and I worked with the death team there for 5 lethal injections. I brought all of this knowledge back to Florida, purchased all of the equipment, and got Florida prepared for the new way of killing people who had possibly killed other people.
But it wasn't just that botched execution that was causing McAndrew to grow increasingly uneasy about the use of the death penalty. He says cases involving the wrongful convictions of a number of men on death row often kept him awake at night.
Sometimes people are wrongfully convicted. I had an experience that keeps me awake at nights. I went to speak in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania about 2 years ago, and I was one of the guest speakers there, and I was walking down the hallway of the large hotel where we were all staying. And I saw a man standing there in the middle of the foyer, and he looked familiar to me. And I saw him look at me, and he opened his arms up, and he wrapped his arms around me, and he gave me a big hug. That was Mr. Juan Melendez. The last time I had seen Melendez was he was in a prison cell at Florida State Prison, and he was on death row. He was found innocent and removed. When I laid down in my bed that night and I tried to close my eyes, I had this vision of me taking Juan into the death chamber and putting him in the electric chair and killing him. And there he's totally innocent of all crimes. He's a wonderful man who should never have gone to prison, but he had a crooked sheriff who was running for election. He needed to catch somebody doing a big crime to get his name in the newspapers. So the sheriff succeeded in what he wanted to do. And this poor man who had come to Florida from Puerto Rico found himself sitting on Florida's death row for 20 years. What a horrible thing to happen.
McAndrew told us he prays just as hard for murder victims as he does for the condemned prisoner. And as he goes on to explain, there are special reasons for that.
There's murder in my own family. My sister-in-law, Linda McAndrew, was murdered in Charlotte, North Carolina in the year 1990. We miss her very much. She was a precious part of our family. She was killed by a horrible man who later committed suicide in prison himself. Today, I find myself praying for him, just as I pray for my sister-in-law, because that's the right thing to do. That's the moral thing to do.
MacAndrew asked for and gained a transfer away from the state prison in Florida to one in Orlando and started to examine his conscience more and more deeply, until one day he realized that he could no longer support the death penalty.
I really did some very serious soul-searching about why we were killing people who had possibly killed other people, to show our children that killing was the right thing to do, or more appropriately, the wrong thing to do. I had been attending Mass for a long time with my wife, more to please her than to please God. But I found myself at a Mass shortly after that, and as we prayed, something I normally didn't do, I found myself asking God to forgive me for ever having taken part in the death penalty or for having ever supported it. And I knew that day that there was no way, no way on God's good earth that I could ever, ever again support the death penalty.
Since that pivotal day in his life, MacAndrew has become one of the leading activists against the death penalty in the US and now lectures and campaigns against it throughout the nation. And it wasn't by chance that his change of view on capital punishment coincided with his decision to join the Catholic Church.
The death penalty in the United States is there for one reason and one reason only. It's a political tool. Politicians know that statistics show that approximately 70% of Americans support the death penalty, just as I did, and probably for the same reasons that I did, simply because it's out of sight, it's out of mind, and they've been told since they were little kids that this is the right thing to do. So if a politician looks at these figures, he says to himself, well, am I going to go for 30% of the votes, or am I going to go for 70% of the votes? If I'm asked if I support the death penalty, I'm going for 70%. So even politicians that I've known in the past who are Catholic men who should not be supporting the death penalty because they know that the church tells them that it's wrong, they still do. I can tell you that this process that I went through in terms of examining my conscience and going to Mass, I was not a Catholic man. I simply attended Mass because my wife is a lifelong Catholic. But through this process, I found myself sitting with a priest. I thought I could just walk into his office and say, Father Joe, I'd like to become a Catholic. Can you sign me up? And I found out it wasn't that easy. I had to go to catechism, in fact, for a year and a half. And then on one beautiful Easter day, I became a Roman Catholic and a very proud one. And my faith has grown every year since.
I was speaking to Ron MacAndrew, a leading campaigner against the death penalty in the US. That's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at the click of a mouse on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so do send us an email. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.